We'll be starting now. I'm Mike Durfee. I am not making money off of this. I had some conflicts, but they aren't economic. And this panel, it talks about evidence. There's a more specific focus. This panel will be addressing child abuse as an issue. How many of your people here work with child abuse, by the way? Oh, good stuff. At any rate, we're going to start with Miles Edwards, who's going to tell us about national reporting.
You've got an IT guy.
Anyhow, there'll be the four of us presenting, and then you guys will applaud and ask wonderful questions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Durfee. My name is Miles Edwards. I'm from American Humane Association. And what I don't have is the long arm to hit the up and down button.
Oh, where is that?
Yeah, they might be able to slide it over a little bit.
You want
to? Ask me the keyboard. Whoops.
Uh-oh. Resume.
I hosed it down.
Just hit resume, I think.
Good. So much for showing up early to practice with all the equipment. My presence here is that I'm part of the National Child Abuse and Neglect Data System technical team. The NCANS has been going on now for almost 20 years. We've been collecting national data now since the mid-90s. And we're pleased that we now have participation from virtually all the states with automated systems at the state levels. There seems to be some entropy every so often, or revisions that go on, and a state will drop out for a year and then come back. But by and large, we've been getting case-level data from probably a consistent 48 states. We do get data from all states, at least at the aggregate level. What's of particular interest to us is that because we have the case level data, we're able to come up with some detailed descriptions of the patterns of abuse and neglect around the country. The Children's Bureau of ACYF has been funding this project now continuously. It's actually required under the CAPTA legislation. Walter McDonald and Associates has held the prime contract, and we at American Humane have essentially been a subcontract to them as really full partners of the technical team. Our focus is really on the reporting and investigation and disposition of child abuse and neglect allegations. One of the important features from a maltreatment death perspective is that we're interested in describing current patterns. So if some state all of a sudden decides to clean out 10,000 pending investigations that the paperwork had not been completed upon, and we don't know about the casework itself, but any type of administrative cleanup, we don't want that distorting the data. So we have a rule in place that any what we call old reports, that is a reported a date on an allegation that's more than a year prior to the current reporting cycle, we don't allow to be included in an annual data set. What we do find is that some maltreatment death cases tend to show up there frequently than non-death cases. And what we do allow is that that tabulation of that count be included in the aggregate data, so that when we look at our annual maltreatment death counts, there's both the case level reporting, but then any types of cases that have been a long time in death review committee, or if there was a criminal case, and also cases that did not really go through the Child Protective Services system, but had been ruled a maltreatment death. These would all be considered as part of our aggregate reporting. What we're seeing is a continued improvement in reporting. And we say that from a qualitative perspective in working with the states. We have fewer questions, we have fewer what-if scenarios from the states. How do we handle this types of things? That's diminished greatly, and that we generally are finding that approximately 75% of the maltreatment deaths are being reported at the case level. This has been true for several years now. This allows us to move towards a national projection of maltreatment death based upon the determined rate of 2.35 deaths, for example, in 2007, 2.35 deaths per 100,000. So what we have are gradations of reporting from case level to aggregate level to then population-based projections that we're using to understand what's going on with death by maltreatment. Based on that, the reporting trend is going up. We can see that the reported fatalities, the ordinance off on that, but the reported fatalities have been showing has shown a slight increase in the last year. Prior to that, the previous 4 years was relatively stable. In fact, had trended down a tad. We don't have a good explanation for what's going on. We suspect it's a number of different issues, but none have really been determined at this point. In terms of age, we see the basic pattern of the young children and males are more likely to be maltreatment fatality victims. And indeed, with looking at odds ratios, it's the about age 3 to 7 that we seem to have an elevation in the disproportionality between boys and girls. We also have a blip down at the 12 to 15 age group. But again, the frequency there is dramatically less. So maltreatment, death by maltreatment is a young child phenomenon. In terms of ethnic and racial groups, we find the disproportionality patterns that we find elsewhere in child protective services and child welfare services. What we're seeing is that relative to Caucasian white children, African American children are more likely to be child victims or to die by child maltreatment. And indeed, when we look at the disparity index, we see that as true. One of the concerns and curiosity I have are the children who are coded as unable to determine, or their race and ethnicity data was missing. From the disparity index, these look like the higher risk or more severe cases. So what we're seeing is a pattern of younger children, more likely boys, and more likely African American, that we have a likelihood of maltreatment death. As I said, the increasing number of fatalities, we don't have the specifically identifiable reasons yet. And I think this is something of concern, but it's also a notion of hope that we may be looking at a better reporting phenomenon going on. Infants in general, and particularly infant boys, are the higher risk groups. Indeed, we have a disparity effect with African American children being at a higher likelihood of death by maltreatment than Caucasians. Do you want to do questions at
sure,
the end?
Sure, you got some time, sure.
Any clarification questions I could address? I think there are different understandings, and it has to do with family values, values and cultural values related to boys versus girls. We've seen the differences in physical abuse in terms of age and sex patterns for years. And as you look at different types of maltreatment, you know, maltreatment is seldom of a single type. Often when you have neglect, which tends to be a chronic issue, there'll be some physical abuse occurring as well. But for years we've seen the different age by sex patterns. We do the two-way plots. It's very, very graphic. We call them the Christmas tree plots, if you will. And what we see is very dramatic shapes in terms of seeing where the frequencies are. But I wouldn't speculate at this time. Some of my colleagues.
I mean, just kind of for very young infants, shaking babies, it's the males predominant, about 54 to 46%. And crying appears to be triggered most commonly, but it doesn't appear to be a difference in how many boys and girls cry in terms of how it's per day. Probably our social understanding of what's okay and what's not okay, and that even for a young age, apparently, we expect to teach boys not to cry. We have other data that suggests that 6% of 3-month-olds are already being spanked, so there are people who are pretty intolerant of crying.
But there's also some literature, if you take a baby, male or female, and you tell people this is diapers, this is a boy or a girl, that at least some studies, the child is treated differently. That people, and males treat babies different than females, and males tend to stand back and poke, and females get closer, but there is a, you're more apt to do this sweet, gentle stuff with a female baby and getting the male baby ready for football, something like that. There's also a value system. If I attach myself to a woman who has a female child, that's someone else's female child, that's a female child. If that's someone else's male child, I may see that child differently. And all of this gets screwed up because what we do, this is incredibly important literature, and it's so much better than it used to be, but we're much better at measuring them than at measuring us. And there's some fascinating literature on the children who will get missed. You take a head trauma that's missed and then picked up later, those cases tend to be the white kids, because white parents wouldn't do that, I guess. And that meanwhile, this lower rate for females, it goes down, comes up in adolescence, up in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, it's going back down. This is the highest rate for females to be homicide victims, but this isn't homicide. This is child abuse. So law enforcement coroner used the word homicide, spelled the same way, identified roughly the same way, but they apply it differently. And then this is much more open, because you can die of neglect here, and criminal justice doesn't get that excited about neglect. Everything is moving, but what's exciting is it has never been done so well. This Walter McDonald has set up a wonderful system to get almost all the states in, doing something. And then this with CDC, you take some heavyweight data people and you pound on this stuff, and we're not sure what it means, but it means at least this much, that we're trying to figure out what it means.
When you said that all the states are involved in some way, is there a standardization to how you're collecting the data across all the states? I mean, I know in the research that I work in, one of the biggest frustrations sometimes is trying to make sense of data across multiple systems. Because not everyone has the same reporting, not everyone has the same technique. So within this, just this system, not in general, are you collecting data in a standardized way, as far as every state that's reporting is reporting under a standardized definition, under a standardized measure for how they're, who they're reporting to or not?
I'm delighted to say yes.
Okay, that's, because I know that's changed, there's a new report, so.
The last part of your question of who they're reporting or not, it's important to understand that child abuse and neglect is a matter of state law, and the levels of determination of substantiated cases are also under state law. So for example, in Pennsylvania, there's very low levels of neglect reporting because what they call general protective services, they don't include under abuse and neglect counts unless it reaches a level of severity for them. In Vermont, there are very high levels of sex abuse because under state law, non-caretaker perpetrators are included in the child abuse and neglect reporting. Those are two examples, dramatic examples of differences in state definition. That being said, all states have codification of statute, types of maltreatment behaviors that get coded in different ways, and it's a legal matter in terms of the level of proof that's needed to what's typically called substantiate an allegation, that is, find it to be true beyond shadow of doubt, true beyond preponderance of evidence, true that it's likely that it happened. All these are used in the state. So there's
standardized to the point that you can standardize.
That's right. And with the NCANS data sets, we spend actually most of our time mapping from state systems onto the common data set. So there's really quite a elaborate, what we call mapping process of trying to move data into a common framework. And with the relational databases we have now, sometimes that becomes quite tricky, particularly in terms of getting the perpetrator relations and so forth. But the child data tends to be more straightforward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you.